Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order. The time is 1:33 p.m. We are in Belts, room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building in the nation's most beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Wednesday, April 8th, 2026. Members present are Senator Dunbar, Senator Yunt, Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Merrick, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Welcome, everyone, to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please turn off or silence your cell phones and join me in extending a warm Senate Labor and Commerce welcome to our recording secretary, Carrie Tupo, and our LIO moderator, Jude. Thank you for being here, Jude. Our agenda for today is Senate Bill 258, Contract Licensing Software Applications, SJR 28. Supporting J-1 and H-1B visa programs, Senate Bill 62, Board of Parole, Membership and Report, Senate Bill 78, Disclosure of Wage Information. We'll also hear from Julie Vogler, the governor's appointee to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. First up is Senate Bill 258, Contract Licensing Software Applications. This is our first second hearing on this bill. Second hearing on this bill. During our first hearing, we had a presentation and took invited testimony. Welcome back to the committee, the Honorable Senator Jesse Keel and his trusty staff, Honor Miller Austin, to provide a brief recap of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. For your record, my name is Jesse Keel. I have the privilege of serving as the senator for Senate District B. With me is Honor Miller Austin on my team. To refresh the committee's memory, this bill retains in a government, whether the state or a local government in Alaska, the right to decide where and how to buy and run the software that makes its operations more effective and more efficient. It prevents a software company from terms and conditions in their contracts that would forbid you to run your software where and how you choose, or to lock you in artificially to their platform or their cloud services.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Keel. Are there any questions for the bill sponsor or his staff? Senator Yunt.
Yeah, thank you through the chair to Senator Keel. Has any other states passed something similar to this? Is this, or are we going to be one of the first ones out of the gate?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In response to Senator Yunt, this has passed in a couple of other states. And I'll let Honor Miller Austin of my staff give you the specifics of where it has already been enacted. I know it's under consideration in quite a few.
Through the chair, Honor Miller Austin, staff to Senator Keel. To Senator Yunt, to answer your question, the other states, there are six states to date: Colorado, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, Idaho, and New Hampshire that have enacted legislation similar to this.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly, I think Ohio, not Idaho, am I correct?
Yes, Ohio, sorry.
Thank you.
Any further questions for the bill sponsor or staff? Seeing and hearing none, we'll go now to invited testimony. We have from the Coalition for Fair Software Licensing, Scott Drexel, available for questions. Are there any questions for Mr. Drexel? Thank you for being available for questions today, Mr. Drexel. I see and hear no questions for you. We'll move now.
Mr. Chairman, may I just add the state of West Virginia actually passed this law last week. So that's it would make Alaska the eighth state to pass it.
Very good. Could you please identify yourself for the record?
My apologies. Scott Drexel on behalf of the Coalition for Fair Software Licensing. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for that added information. Seeing and hearing no further questions for Mr. Drexel, so we'll go now to public testimony. Public testimony is now open on Senate Bill 258. Is there anyone in the room or online who wishes to testify to this item? Seeing and hearing none, we'll close public testimony on Senate Bill 258. That brings Senate Bill 258 back before the committee. Is there any further committee discussion? Seeing and hearing none, what are the wishes of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to report Senate Bill 258, version 34-LS1172/November from committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, Senate Bill 258, version 34-LS1172/N as in Ninilchik, is reported from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork and set up for our next item. We're back on the record. It's 1:40 p.m. now here in Senate Labor and Commerce. Next up on our agenda is Senate Joint Resolution 28. This is our second hearing on this item. During our first hearing, we had a presentation of the bill and took invited testimony. I would like to invite the bill sponsor and her staff, or just her staff, the amazing Mike Mason, to the table to provide a brief recap of this resolution. Welcome back to Senate Labor and Commerce, Mr. Mason. Please put yourself on the record and begin your brief recap of this resolution.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Mason. I am staff to Senator Lukey Gail Tobin. She is not exactly sure where Senator Tobin is at the moment. I appreciate the second hearing for Senate Joint Resolution 28. Very simply, this resolution recognizes the important role that visa programs, such as the J-1 visa program, the H-1B program, and perhaps the program that is going to be an amendment here in a moment, play to the economy and the education of children and young adults across Alaska. These international visa workers are vital to filling Alaska's diverse workforce needs. And if you travel around Alaska, especially this summer, you are going to see these visa workers filling very important jobs across the state. This resolution simply puts the Alaska legislature on record as supporting these visa programs. It also urges the Alaska Congressional Delegation to work with federal policymakers to preserve and strengthen these workable pathways that support the state's unique workforce needs. And finally, last September, the federal government imposed a $100,000 payment for certain H-1B petitions. Previously, that fee was $5,000. This effectively ended most employers' ability to fill these open jobs through this program. That has made it nearly impossible for Alaska's public schools to utilize that program, and this bill would put this resolution would put the Alaska legislature on record as opposing that payment. And I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mason. Are there any questions for Mr. Mason? Hearing and seeing none at this time, we will open public testimony on SJR 28. Is there anyone in the room or online who wishes to testify to this item? Please come forward, state your name and affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Jonathan Schaefer. I reside in Taslina, Alaska, and I'm representing myself.
Welcome.
I wanted to stop by just to make a brief comment in support of this resolution. Having worked in seasonal employment across the United States with a number of J-1 enrollees, I can say that the program, in my opinion, benefits both employers and those enrolled in it. It is remarkable, the opportunities that are provided for people in small communities to learn about the world around them, from the people who travel there to serve visitors who travel from all over the place. And it is remarkable the benefit that those who enroll in the J-1 program have in gaining a more positive view of the United States, which they take back to their communities around the world. I didn't come here planning to testify today, just happened to be in Juneau, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Excellent. Thank you for coming. We appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else in the room or online who wishes to testify to SGR 28? Hearing and seeing none, we will close public testimony on SGR 28. That brings this resolution back before the committee. Members have a draft proposed amendment in their packets. May I have a motion, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment A.1.
I'll object for purposes of explanation.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman. This amendment adds H-2B visas, referenced in the backup documentation, into the resolution. It also updates the name of the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security from Kristi Noem to Mark Wayne Mullen.
Thank you for that explanation, Senator Merrick. Are there any questions for the maker of the motion? Any committee discussion on the amendment? This time I'll remove my objection, and Amendment A.1 is adopted. Mr. Mason, do you have any closing remarks?
Once again, Mike Mason, staff to Senator Tobin. I want to thank Senator Merrick for putting forward the amendment. I actually thought about doing it myself, and you beat me to it, so thank you very much. Once again, I just think if you go around Alaska and you look at the people that are filling a lot of these seasonal jobs, you're going to find a lot of these international foreign workers, and they are filling some vital roles in our economy, and I think that should be supported. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Any further committee discussion on this item? Seeing and hearing none, what are the wishes of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to report Senate Joint Resolution 28, version 34-LS1555/alpha, as amended, from committee with individual recommendations in the attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, SGR 28, version 34-LS1555/A, as in anchor point, as amended, is reported from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork and set up for our next item. We're back on the record. It's 1:48 p.m. now here in Senate Labor and Commerce. Up next, we are going to take up the consideration of the governor's appointment of Julie Vogler to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Ms. Vogler, if you could please join us at the table, put yourself on the record. We welcome you to Senate Labor and Commerce. If you could please give us a brief statement about your qualifications and desire to serve on the Regulatory Commission, that would be most excellent.
For the record, Julie Vogler, RCA Commissioner. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I was appointed by Governor Dunleavy on March 11, 2026, for a six-year term to replace Robert M. Pickett. I meet the statutory qualifications to be appointed as a commissioner. I have earned two bachelor's degrees, finance and accounting, both from the University of Alaska Anchorage, and have over 21 years of regulatory experience. I began my career at the RCA in 2004 as a utility financial analyst one, which I will refer to as a UFA, the entry-level position in that series. I progressed through the series and in 2015 became the finance section supervisor, which is the analyst four, the advanced level position that takes on the responsibilities of the finance section. In this role, I temporarily served as the advisory section manager, where I had oversight and responsibilities for supervising both the tariff section and the finance section, also while maintaining my workload that I had at the time. In 2022, my progression continued and I advanced to the utility master analyst role position. I played a role in the Power Cost Equalization Program, or PCE, since I began my career at the Commission. For the first few years, I managed the PCE program for non-economically regulated participating utilities, and later on, when staff resources were limited, I continued to manage the program and process the PCE filings. In my supervisory role, I provided guidance and reviewed the work product of the analyst to the one responsible for managing the program. And most recently, as a master analyst, I provided extensive training to a newly hired financial analyst one. I was fortunate early on in my career to be assigned complex rate filings as advanced level analysts left the commission. I took that as the opportunity and started teaching myself all things rate making. I was assigned to staff on dockets and filings for all utility types, which included gas surcharge filings, rate filings, gas supply agreements, regulatory assets, and regulations dockets. As I advanced through the UFA series, assigned filings became more complex, some being controversial and precedential in nature. Furthermore, the commissioners often relied on me for guidance on matters that I had the subject matter expertise. As a master analyst, I continue to be an advisor to the commissioners, providing guidance in the decision-making process. I performed qualitative and quantitative analysis of complex and non-complex matters for regulated utilities and pipelines carriers and non-economically regulated utilities. In both my finance and master analyst roles, I mentored, trained, and provided guidance to staff members in various sections of the agency, developed and implemented procedures to provide consistency amongst the advisory sections, independently developed agency-wide procedures and workflows, collaborated with management to develop section-specific procedures and workflows, and most recently developed the procedure for the annual regulatory cost charge calculation for the RCA. For the last 2 years, I've been the legislative liaison for the commission, which includes communicating with legislatures and staff, attending committee hearings, presenting before committees, and reviewing and drafting of fiscal notes. As a commissioner, I continue to be involved in all legislative matters. As an analyst, I was responsible for thoroughly reviewing the record in a proceeding, whether that be a PCE filing, tariff filing, or docket filing, ensuring compliance with applicable statutes and regulations, and providing the commissioners with an analysis and a recommended path forward. I was objective in my review and analysis, which resulted in recommendations that were also objective. This is a skill set that I have now and bring with me to my role as a commissioner. In closing, my education, regulatory experience, and institutional knowledge allowed me to immediately transition into my role as a commissioner. I look forward to continuing to serve as a commissioner and would be happy to answer any questions at this time. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Ms. Vogler? seeing and hearing no questions. I have a few questions. Oftentimes, I'll ask folks to get a broad understanding of maybe from a more lighthearted perspective of their experience and that they maybe enjoy or not enjoy and then find fulfilling. What have been the best, worst, and weirdest things that you have encountered during your time with the RCA?
For the record, Julie Vogler to the chair, I would say the best times is progressing through my career at the commission. You have your learning curves, you tackle those learning curves, and you accomplish and you work your way up through the organization to where I am now. For the worst, there are times when there's high turnover. We have seen, I don't know how to say it, sorry. Then there's high turnover throughout the agency, and so it's both on the commissioner level and the staff level. So continuity, we can kind of lose the continuity, but we gain that back, and just being part of the commission as a whole, continue to just building on that. And I forgot the third one you asked me.
Weirdest. We did best, we did worst, weirdest.
Could be this hearing.
Okay. Through the chair for Senator Dunbar, this hearing.
Very good. Thank you. Appreciate people who are appointed that they have a sense of humor and work well. Thank you for that. As the work at the Regulatory Commission gets significantly more attention and spotlight, especially if we have a large gas project coming to our state, whether it is a gas pipeline project or an import facility, how is it that as a commissioner you will be able to protect ratepayers through your role on the commission?
For the record, through the chair, to the chair, Julie Vogler. So as we are getting these filings, as the filings come before the commissioners, we will look at those filings and look at the components of the filings, review the costs within those, and make sure that the rates to the consumers are just and reasonable. And we currently, right now, are in gathering stages for the import facilities, because there are two that are being contemplated, and we've opened an informational docket at the commission where we're gathering that information so we can start looking at those types of things.
Very good. Thank you for that answer. Glacier Oil is also considering an import facility from the Osprey platform in the form of a floating regasification unit. Is that project also being considered as you contemplate import facilities?
For the record, through the chair, Julie Vogler, through the chair, yes, in that iDocket, they actually came in, it's Cook Inlet, they actually came in, and Cook Inlet LNG, they actually came in and did a presentation in that docket, so they are participating.
Most excellent. Thank you very much for that. Are there any questions? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up to the chair's question about the gas line in particular. And I'm curious what I think I understand it, but I always could use some more specificity. If NSTAR, the largest supplier of heat and gas in Anchorage and the area, if they enter into contracts with whether it's Glenfarne or someone else, and that number is significantly higher than the cost of gas would be from import, what, if any, role does the RCA have in protecting consumers in that case?
For the record, Julie Vogler, through the chair, Senator Dunbar, currently gas supply agreements, I'll talk about those specifically. We'll likely also see terminal use agreements from these import facilities. AS 4205-141D provides the guidance for the commission to review those contracts. And we look at if there's going to be a possibility that there won't be any supply. We look at the portfolios of the gas profile portfolios of the utilities themselves and make sure costs are not excessive.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Indeed.
So the cost, the costs you reference, could those include sort of contracted buy-sell amounts between these two entities? If so, do you have the ability to void the contract, or is it just that you can prevent NSTAR or whomever from recovering the costs within the tariff? Is that your tool, or how do you actually protect the consumer? I think all of us are worried about, obviously, the cost of gas in the coming decade. Mm-hmm. And I specifically, because of I think a number of us are you know, reviewing these things on the Resources Committee and elsewhere, and concerned that Alaska might get very far down the road with a gas pipeline and become committed in a variety of ways, including sort of ideologically committed to the idea of not importing gas, and in so doing agree to very expensive terms from the gas as it's delivered. And so I'm wondering what the tool is from the RCA to sort of protect the consumers from those kind of maybe more politically driven forces.
For the record, Julie Vogler, through the chair, Senator Dunbar. So we do have – so right now, currently, contracts, how they work, and I can just speculate they would work the same. The price of the gas is negotiated between the seller and the utility, or the producer and the utility. AS 4205-141D was implemented at a time when that was the structure of contracting. With this LNG imports and the cost of gas under this, it could change a little bit, and the commission does have the option to investigate the costs included in the contract. And we might be possible that we would need to start looking at contract prices differently.
Okay, and that final question, Mr.
Senator Dunbar.
And that would apply both to imported gas and also to gas that came down a potential LNG pipeline, correct?
For the record, Julie Vogler through the chair, Senator Dunbar, yes, that is correct. And I would also like to note that there's five commissioners, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself.
Understood. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Any other questions? I have another human interest question.
Okay.
So there's another very famous Jay Vogler in our state's history. Are you related to Joe Vogler?
For the record, Julie Vogler to the chair. No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
I get asked often, though.
Oh, very good. Well, happy to put that on the record here for you.
Thank you.
Excellent. All right. Any further questions or comments about Ms. Vogler's appointment to the RCA? Hearing and seeing none at this time, I'll open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room or online who wishes to provide public testimony to the appointment of Ms. Vogler to the RCA? Seeing and hearing no one at this time, we will close public testimony. That brings this appointment back before the committee. May I have a motion, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to advance the governor's appointee to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, Julie Vogler, to the joint session of the House and Senate for consideration.
With that, Ms. Vogler is referred to a joint session of the House and Senate for further consideration. I remind members that a signature on the committee report today in no way reflects the members' vote during the joint floor session. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork and set up for our next item.
Thank you.
back on the record. It is 2:03 p.m. here in Senate Labor and Commerce. Our next item on our agenda is Senate Bill 62. It's our third hearing on this bill, first this year. As a reminder to members, during our last hearing on the bill, the committee adopted a committee substitute version H as a working document. I'd like to invite staff to the bill sponsor, the Honorable Luke Yale-Tobin, Mr. Louis Flora, to the table to provide a brief recap of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for your time and thank you for the committee's time. For the record, my name is Louis Flora, staff to Senator Luke Yale-Tobin. Brief recap on Senate Bill 62. Senate Bill 62 seeks to help the Alaska Board of Parole process parole applications in a fair and accountable manner. It seeks to create a board that more closely reflects the incarcerated population in Alaska. As Alaska Natives make up 40% of the people incarcerated in Alaska, yet are approximately 20% or lower of the state's population, Senate Bill 62 requires a board member to be a member of a federally recognized tribe. As 80% of individuals in the state's correctional system report a substance use disorder, Senate Bill 62 requires that one member of the parole board be a physician, psychologist, or psychiatrist with drug and alcohol treatment experience. To provide accountability and a victim's rights perspective on the board, Senate Bill 62 requires one board member to be a crime victim, family member, or member of a crime victim advocacy group. Finally, Senate Bill 62 applies 10-year term limits to board members consisting of 2 5-year terms and requires a board report annually to the legislature.
Thank you very much, Mr. Flora. Are there any questions for committee members? I have a question, sir. I seem to recall that the Department of Corrections had some additional ideas for this bill, maybe what they were considering. Are those things that your office is considering and things that you would like to change with the bill, or is the bill good?
Through the chair, Louis Flora, staff to Senator Luke Tobin, those changes I believe are productive. We have not heard directly from the commissioner's office on them, but moving the executive director of the Board of Parole into the purview of the commissioner's office, I think, would provide some beneficial oversight and accountability measures. And so I think we're okay with that. And if it comes out that it's a problem, we can work it out in a future committee. But thank you for the change.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Okay. We'll go next to invited testimony. Ms. Christina Shadura. Ms. Shadura, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony, please.
Good afternoon. Thank you, members of the committee. Christina Shadura, lifelong multi-generational Alaskan, Anchorage Reentry Coalition Coordinator here in Anchorage, Alaska, working with justice-involved individuals, workforce representatives, and community partners who are directly affected by how parole decisions are made and how transparent that process is. I speak in support of SB 62 today as it stands for 3 reasons. First, SB 62 modernizes the composition and leadership of the Board of Parole so it can better respond to today's realities. This bill establishes a defined limit of service, thereby mitigating risks of member fatigue and over-consolidating leadership. But more importantly to the composition, it also requires that one board member be a licensed physician, psychologist, or psychiatrist with experience treating drug or alcohol addiction, which is critical because substance use disorders are at the center of so many of the cases we are seeing in our correction system today. 80% of Alaska DOC inmates have an assessed substance use disorder, substantially above the 58% to 65% national inmate average. Second, SB 62 brings victim perspective and Alaska Native voices more fully into the parole decision process. It reserves a seat for a crime victim, family member, victim advocacy group, and requires one member to be from a recognized tribal entity in Alaska. in a state where Alaska Native people are disproportionately overrepresented at 42% of the overall prison population, and where victims often feel left out of the process, these changes help ensure decisions reflect both community safety, community experience, and possibly even community restorative justice. And finally, the third, SB 62 improves transparency and accountability through an annual public report on parole operations and outcomes. The bill requires a detailed data on the number and types of hearings, grant and denial rates, most serious offenses, reason for denials, and revocations. Why are we interested in this data? For those of us doing the reentry work out in the community, this kind of data is essential to identify barriers, track measured outcomes, and align treatment and supervision with what actually works to keep people safe in the community. We cannot manage what we cannot measure. So without this knowledge and subject matter guidance of our partners at the Department of Corrections, we out in the community, whether it's nonprofit organizations, treatment specialists, second chance employers, housing providers, or the individuals themselves, struggle to navigate the system instead of collaborating to help make it as consistent and responsive as possible. Happy to answer any questions I can, but thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Shadura. Are there any questions from committee members? Seeing, hearing none, Mr. Flora, do you have any closing remarks?
Louis Flora, staff to Senator Lukey Gale Tobin. I just really appreciate the work that the committee and the committee chair have done on this piece of legislation, and appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll take a brief at ease while we set up for our final item of the day. Brief at ease. Back on the record, it is 2:12 p.m. now. Before we begin our last item on our agenda, I wanted to wish staff to Senator Merrick, Sorcha Hazleton, a very happy birthday. Happy birthday, ma'am. Up now. Wow. And I have also just been informed that it is also Senator L.V. Gray Jackson's birthday. So happy birthday as well. Thank if you stick around after, we'll probably sing. But not on the record today. Our final item is Senate Bill 78, Disclosure of Wage Information, brought to us by the Honorable Senator Forrest Dunbar. It's our first hearing on the bill. To present the bill, we have Senator Dunbar and his staff, Ariel Harbison. Welcome. Please place yourselves on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Forrest Dunbar, Senator from District J.
And Ariel Harbison, staff to Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 78, Disclosure of Wage Information, seeks to support fair hiring practices for the protection of all Alaskan workers, while also ensuring employers are not placed at unfair risk or disadvantage. Note that this bill is very similar to HB 146, which was brought a number of years ago by Representative Liz Snyder, also from East Anchorage. About 15 other states have passed reforms similar to the ones I'll describe today. Studies have documented the challenges addressed by SB 78. For example, in a nationally representative survey of workers, 30% had employers who asked about salary history, and about 50% reported being discouraged or prohibited from discussing their salary. Under SB 78, applicants cannot be asked nor required to provide their salary history during the application process. Job postings must include compensation information. Applicants and current employees are free to discuss salaries with one another if they want to, and retaliation against the employee or applicant for not sharing their salary history or for discussing wages is not allowed. Removing salary history from the interview process allows the employer and applicant to focus on qualifications, thus helping to ensure people joining and returning to the workforce are paid based on their current abilities and potential. Additionally, SB 78 helps streamline the application process by requiring employers to post information about compensation, including a salary or salary range. This helps both the employer and the applicant. An informed applicant means an employer is less likely to expend precious time and resources recruiting, interviewing, only to be turned down because the pay does not meet the needs of the potential employee. And I'll pause for my planned remarks there and say I have members of my family who have recently gone through the hiring process, and I don't know if many of us have been out there looking for a job recently, but for a variety of reasons, including certain sites like Monster.com and others, folks find themselves doing a lot of putting in a lot of applications and even going to a lot of interviews, and they get towards the end of the process before they realize what the compensation offered is, and they get to the end, they hear what the compensation is, and they say, well, I can't take that. It doesn't pay enough. And then both sides have wasted their time. And that is one of the things that this bill helps to alleviate. So federal law already requires that workers are free to discuss salary information with one another, and SB 78 incorporates this protection into state statute. Alaska's economy depends on a strong labor force. This bill seeks to make the hiring process fairer and more efficient. It will help attract workers to employment opportunities in Alaska, retain workers in the state, and help employers fill vacancies. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Are there any questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, we will go next to invited testimony. First up, we have President of the AFL-CIO, Ms. Joelle Hall. Ms. Hall, welcome back to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Bjorkman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joelle Hall. I am the President of the Alaska AFL-CIO, and Senator Bjorkman, you've taken the words out of my mouth twice. Is she related to Joe Vogler? No. And happy birthday, Senator Gray Jackson. I was thinking both those things as I was waiting and listening to the preceding events, but thank you very much for my time today. As many of you know, the Alaska labor movement and labor unions in general are formed around a central organizing thesis, a collective bargaining agreement. A collective bargaining agreement is a transparent document indicating what are the wages and benefits and working conditions of any set of workers. This includes pay fairness, pay equity for women, people of color. Collective bargaining agreements, simply put, they indicate what you're gonna get paid to do the job, regardless of who you are. Not everybody has the benefit of being in a collective bargaining agreement, I'm sad to report. But I do think this is the best way to go about training and compensating people equally, fairly, across the board, based on their skill set and the job that they're providing. SB 78 is a great step forward for the private sector to have this transparent information about what people are going to be paid and what are the benefits and working conditions that they can expect. I was once in the private sector, I guess I technically still am, but I would apply for jobs, and much to what Senator Dunbar said, you know, you get to the end of it and you realize that the pay and benefits is either an indication that this job is more than I am prepared to do, or I am far more qualified than I am for this level of compensation. Knowing that up front would save everybody time and money. This is also an issue of fairness, because the people who are most likely to not benefit from wage transparency are women and people of color. And this block allows them to be treated unfairly in the compensation. So I appreciate your time. We are wholeheartedly in support of SB 78 And I appreciate your time today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hall. Are there any questions from committee members?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I should have also noted, I apologize, if the chair desires, Ms. Harbison is prepared to go through a sectional analysis as well.
Very well. Thank you for that offer. Ms. Harbison.
Ariel Harbison, staff to Senator Dunbar. There are two sections. Section 1 amends AS23.10, Employment Practices and Working Conditions. It adds Article 9, which is disclosure of employee compensation, and the following sections. So the first one is the disclosure of wages, requires that job postings include that salary and the range. It allows applicants and employees to discuss their current wage and prohibits employers from asking about their salary history. Clarifies that nothing in this section obligates an employee or applicant to disclose their compensation, prohibits an employee or applicant from voluntarily disclosing, or prohibits an employer from using information that is voluntarily disclosed under this subsection when determining the salary of an employee or applicant. The next subsection is posting summary required. So the employer is required to post information summarizing this bill's provisions. Retaliation is prohibited in the next section, so they can't retaliate. Employers can't retaliate against an employee for exercising their rights under this bill. Damages for retaliation allows an employee to file a civil claim against the employer if the employer retaliates. There's a statute of limitation that gives the employee no more than 3 years after a violation to file this civil claim. There's a penalty that creates a fine between $100 and $2,000 for violations and directs the Department of Labor and Workforce Development Commissioner to determine the amount. Next section under regulations, it adds language directing the Department of Labor and Workforce Development Commissioner to implement and interpret this bill and adopt the regulations accordingly. And lastly, there are definitions for employee and employer. Next, final section 2 amends the uncodified law of the state of Alaska by adding a new section specifying that this act applies to compensation for services performed on or after the effective date.
Very good. Thank you, ma'am. Are there any questions from committee members? Hearing and seeing none, Senator Dunbar, do you have any closing remarks?
Mr. Chair, I just first like to say thank you very much for hearing this bill. As I indicated in my opening remarks, the other body considered this bill language very similar to this several years ago, and it worked its way through a number of committees that unfortunately didn't get over the finish line. But I do believe that this set of reforms would be, first of all, very helpful to employees in this state, and provide the transparency they need and folks seeking jobs, the transparency they need. But I also believe it is best practices for employers. And most employers already do these things, to be clear. Most employers do not retaliate against their employees for discussing wages, and indeed that's prohibited by federal law. Most employers are transparent about the compensation they offer. However, I believe that this, again, is best practice that will save both employees and employers time and lead to better pay fairness in this state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. This time we will set Senate Bill 78 aside for further consideration at a future meeting. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again on Friday, the day after tomorrow, April 10th, when we will take up Senate Bill 217, Employer Contributions, House Bill 110, Social Work Licensure Compact, Senate Bill 272, Health Information Exchange. As there is no further business to come before the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee at this time, we are adjourned at 2:23 p.m. Thank you.